You are listening to The Real Shia Beliefs, a collaboration between Thacker Lane and Al Hujah Islamic Seminary. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider becoming our patron by donating at thackerlane.org/support.
Now, in the major occultation, because now the Shia did not have direct access to the Imam alayhi salam, this gave rise to the role of scholars. And if you ever wonder about the marja'iyya system, how it evolved, it started during the time of the Imams, peace be upon them, when al-Imam al-Baqir, al-Imam al-Sadiq, peace be upon them, would educate their students to be trained to issue fatwas. For example, when people from villages wanted to know the rulings, and they did not have the privilege of meeting the Imam on a regular basis, the Imam alayhi salam would defer them to his companions. The Imams would tell them, I trained my companions, I gave them the tools and principles they need to extract Islamic laws. It started at the time of the Imams, peace be upon them. But really, we find the role of scholars becoming extremely important in Al-Ghaybatul Kubra. Because now the scholars started to represent the Imam. In Al-Ghaybatul Sughra, the minor occultation, the Imam had official representatives whom he directly appointed. But in Al-Ghaybatul Kubra, the Imam alayhi salam did not specifically appoint anyone. The Imam put guidelines for the Shia. And any scholar who fulfills those guidelines, has those qualities, is qualified to represent the Imam alayhi salam. There is one very important hadith that demonstrates the Imam, al-Imam al-Mahdi ajallahu ta'ala farajah, referred the Shia to scholars. What is that hadith? That is a hadith which al-Shaykh al-Saduq has narrated in the book Kamal al-Din. Al-Shaykh al-Tusi has also narrated this in his book. Basically, al-Saduq says, حَدَّثَنَا مُحَمَّدْ إِبْنُ مُحَمَّدْ إِبْنُ عِصَامِ. He narrates this from Al-Kulayni, from Ishaq ibn Ya'qub. He says, سَأَلْتُ مُحَمَّدْ إِبْنُ عُثْمَانِ الْعَمْرِ أَنْ يُوصِلَ لِي كِتَابًا قَدْ سَأَلْتُ فِيهِ عَنْ مَسَائِلَ أَشْكَلَتْ عَلَيْهِ. This man says, Ishaq ibn Ya'qub, that I went to one of the ambassadors of Imam al-Mahdi and I had questions for Imam al-Mahdi. So I asked Al-Amri, who's one of the ambassadors of Imam al-Mahdi, to forward my letter which has questions to Imam al-Mahdi. The Imam alayhi salam answered his questions. Now here's the fundamental point. The Imam alayhi salam in this letter states, at the end of the letter, وَأَمَّا الْحَوَادِثُ الْوَاقِعَةِ. As for occurring events, events that happen in society, new events, issues, what do you do when you don't have access to your Imam? How do you know what the ruling is when you no longer have direct access to the Imam of your time? وَأَمَّا الْحَوَادِثُ الْوَاقِعَةُ فَارْجُعُوا فِيهَا إِلَىٰ رُوَاتِ حَدِيثِنَا. The Imam alayhi salam says, in these matters, go back to who? The narrators of our hadith. Those people who narrate our hadith, who are familiar with our hadith. فَإِنَّهُمْ حُجَّتِي عَلَيْكُمْ. The Imam alayhi salam says in this hadith, they are my hujjah, my proof on you. In other words, they represent me. وَأَنَا حُجَّةُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِمْ. And I am the hujjah of God on them. So if you want to seek the tenets of your religion, go to those who are familiar with our hadith, meaning the scholars who are familiar with our hadith. So this is a hadith from al-Imam al-Mahdi ajallahu ta'ala farajah, in which he clearly is deferring the Shia to the narrators of hadith or scholars. So if someone asks, from where did the scholars get their authority? This is one evidence that is cited to substantiate that. Any questions on the content of the hadith? Do you feel the Imam alayhi salam is very clear with his content, or there is room for doubt? What is the Imam saying here in this hadith?
I had a discussion with a brother who said the narrator of hadith.
I'll get to the chain. We're talking about the content now. Assuming the Imam did say it, any issue with the content?
The content itself has the word narrators of the hadith. That's what you're trying to say?
Yeah, the content, it's not tantamount to scholars as per the other side of argument. They say anyone who narrates a hadith can be approached.
See, we know it's a given that the Imam is not deferring us to any narrator of hadith. If there's a narrator of hadith and he's known to be an imposter and a liar, or he's known to be sinful, is it possible the Imam is deferring us to him? Absolutely not. When the Imam says to the narrators of our hadith, at the time, who were the narrators of our hadith? People like Kulayni, right? That was their job.
They must understand the context.
They understand the dynamics. They know which hadith is probably sahih. You have to be a scholar to know that. So while the Imam technically did not use the word scholar, the Imam alayhi salam, in saying a statement like that, it was a given at the time and the context in which the Imam was speaking that the person is experienced. The person is an expert in hadith. And you cannot be an expert in hadith unless you're a scholar.
So in the context itself says when you face new issues. So like for the old issues, we already had hadith. So it is given that the scholar who should be capable of removing solutions or giving you solutions.
That's another hint that the Imam says with the occurring events. That means they're ongoing. Someone who's just a narrator of hadith and is not an expert in extracting laws, how can they help you when there's a new issue? It's a given from the context of the hadith, the Imam means scholars who know the depths of the hadith. Not just anyone who's just a narrator. Now that's the content. Most scholars have accepted the content. They're like, okay, the content is pretty good. Maybe some objections raised here and there, but the content is good. But some scholars have raised an issue with the sanad, the chain of this hadith. Is this hadith a sahih hadith? Is it a valid hadith? Or does it have a broken chain? We have one problem with this hadith, and that is Ishaq ibn Ya'qub, who's narrating this incident, that I went to Al-Amri, the ambassador of Al-Imam Al-Mahdi. I forwarded a letter to the Imam. The Imam alayhi salam sent back a letter answering my questions, and it was the handwriting of the Imam and the stamp of the Imam. So Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is narrating this. Well, who is Ishaq ibn Ya'qub? No. Scholars have examined who Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is. And they are saying today, based on their research, that he's anonymous. We don't know if he's truthful. We cannot find evidence from Najashi, from Tusi, other biographers, that he is thiqa, he is trustworthy. So how do we know that Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is trustworthy? So there goes the hadith. It's not binding on us. It doesn't have any weight. Why? Because Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is anonymous. Secondly, this hadith, we find Kulayni in the path of it, in the chain. See, Saduq narrates it from someone, from Kulayni. This same hadith is not found in Kafi. How come? If this was really an authentic hadith, at least Kulayni himself would have mentioned it in Kafi. Whereas we don't find this hadith in Kafi. Tusi narrates it, and you have Kulayni in the chain, and you also have Saduq narrating it, and you have Kulayni in the chain. But Kulayni himself, who has a book of hadith, never mentioned it. So that raises doubts about this hadith. Why? What's going on here? These are two objections. We have a few responses to that. As for the argument that Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is anonymous, we have no way to verify who he is. Many scholars have mentioned that there is actually a way to verify him such that we have confidence he must have been reliable. How? See, this hadith, Shaykh al-Saduq, al-Tusi, they say we've heard a number of trustworthy sources narrating this hadith from Kulayni. Kulayni from Ishaq ibn Ya'qub, the guy in question. When it comes to such a sensitive issue, Remember, this is not just any hadith out of the 16,000 hadiths that Khulaini was familiar with. This is a letter from Al-Imam Al-Mahdi in the Minor Occultation. It's a very sensitive issue. Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is claiming he has a letter from the Mahdi. That's not something to take lightly. If Khulaini had doubts about the claim of this person, he would not have narrated this hadith. Whereas At-Tusi, As-Saduq say, he narrated this hadith to us. So we can rely on Khulaini and on the fact that he narrated this hadith from Ishaq ibn Ya'qub to verify that Khulaini must have been certain this was a letter from Al-Imam Al-Mahdi. He had evidence that this was true. Otherwise, Al-Khulaini is not going to narrate an incident like that if he wasn't sure of it. See, imagine if today somebody comes to a marja, just as an example, and he says, you know, I have a letter from the Mahdi. And the marja goes, yeah, so-and-so scholar, he narrated to me that he got a letter from Al-Imam Al-Mahdi, and in the letter the Imam said so-and-so. The marja is not going to do that. You don't open this door. Unless the marja himself saw the letter and he had evidence this was true. So why can't we rely on the judgment of Khulaini when he narrated this hadith? See, if this was an average hadith, we could say, okay, we don't know who Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is. We don't know. He's an anonymous narrator, and Khulaini just narrated it. But this is a sensitive hadith that involves a letter coming from Al-Imam Al-Mahdi in Ghaybat al-Sughra. And Al-Khulaini, if he was not sure about this narrator, he would not have narrated this hadith. He would have dismissed it. He would have absolutely dismissed it. So the fact that Khulaini narrates this, and he says that this man, he got a letter from the Imam, and the letter stating the following content, gives us confidence that Khulaini either trusted this person, or he knew the letter was the handwriting of the Imam. One of these two. Otherwise, he would not narrate such a sensitive issue. Because remember, at that time, many people claimed to be corresponding with Imam al-Mahdi. Many people claimed to have a direct link with the Imam. Many people faked letters. And Khulaini and others were very strict with them. Why did Khulaini narrate this hadith? He must have trusted the source. So that gives us confidence. Whoever Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is, he must have been reliable in the eyes of Khulaini. How do you feel about this response?
So then that gets us to the next question. Why didn't Khulaini, if Ishaq ibn Ya'qub was so reliable and Khulaini did trust him, then why didn't Khulaini record it in Kafi?
So Khulaini definitely narrated this to Tusi and Saduq through intermediaries and other scholars. We have no doubt about that. But he did not include it in Kafi. Why? Many reasons. Number one, he may have forgotten. Remember, you have how many hadiths in Kafi? 16,000. He's not dealing with 100 hadiths for you to say, how could he forget? 16,000, you forget. Maybe he, remember back then they didn't have computers. He probably had thousands of stacks of papers and he's compiling it into a book. Maybe one paper, you know, got lost. Maybe he thought he included it and he didn't. It's not like he had a team working with him, making sure that he put everything. He may have forgotten it, slipped him. Don't you think that's possible? When you're working by yourself on such a big project that takes 20 years, took him 20 years to compile Kafi, and has 16,000 hadiths. He may have missed many hadiths to include in the book. He put them somewhere to categorize them, and then he forgot. You yourself, if you do research, sometimes you forget notes that you've put somewhere. You know, imagine 16,000 hadiths. So that's not something that necessarily makes us doubt the hadith. Secondly, maybe, because this is such a sensitive issue, receiving letters from Imam al-Mahdi, Khulaini narrated it to other scholars, but he didn't put it in his book. Because if he puts it in his book and it gets published, the caliphs will come. You saw a person who corresponded to the Mahdi? Where is this Mahdi? Show us. Reveal his identity. Who's talking to him? Maybe he feared the consequences. Maybe he had security concerns in putting it in his book officially, but he narrated it to other scholars. Sometimes I may narrate something to you verbally, but I'm not willing to put it on paper for specific consequences, for security concerns. So maybe that's why he did not put it in Al-Kafi. Not because he did not believe that it's a sahih hadith, but because he had valid concerns about putting such a hadith officially in his book that's talking about him seeing the letter of Al-Imam Al-Mahdi. He didn't want the people to know that he saw the letter of Al-Imam Al-Mahdi because that had consequences. So any number of reasons could be the reason why he did not include it in Kafi. But the point is, we have a sahih chain that he said it, Kulayni. Yeah, we don't know who Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is, but at least we can trust Kulayni's judgment. That he's not going to narrate a hadith if he's not sure of it, given that it's such a sensitive hadith.
Is it possible that the name of Ishaq ibn Ya'qub was added later on?
Well, not really, because Shaykh al-Saduq is pretty close to Kulayni. He only has one link between him and Kulayni. That link is reliable, and he's narrating it from Kulayni. Kulayni says, I narrate this from Ishaq ibn Ya'qub. So it seems there was a person like that, Ishaq ibn Ya'qub. We just don't know if he was reliable or not. So scholars are saying today, we can trust the judgment of Kulayni. See, Kulayni never came out and said, Ishaq ibn Ya'qub is reliable. He never said that anywhere, because he wouldn't normally say things like that. The fact that he took the letter from him and he narrates the incident tells us that he trusted Ishaq ibn Ya'qub. And if Kulayni, who has so much experience, trusts him, why can't we trust Kulayni's judgment? And remember, this is not just any hadith. It's a sensitive hadith. It's an important hadith. And remember, the content of it is so important too. It's authorizing scholars to act on behalf of the imams. That's big. Kulayni would not treat this, you know, as like a story that I heard from someone. Okay, story you hear from someone. Maybe you'll take a story from a source that's not so reliable and you say, I heard from the source X story. This is not an average story. This is a big, big incident. So this is one hadith that we have. Another hadith that we have is a hadith that is found in التفسير الإمام العسكري, in which the Imam عليه السلام says, فَأَمَّا مَنْ كَانَ مِنَ الْفُقَهَاءِ صَائِلًا لِنَفْسِهِ. If there is a scholar, see this one now specifically mentions scholar, faqih. صَائِلًا لِنَفْسِهِ, restrains himself. حَافِظًا لِدِينِهِ, protects his religion. مُخَالِفًا لِهَوَاهِ, or عَلَى هَوَاهِ, opposes his desire. مُطِيعًا لِأَمْرِ مَوْلَاهِ. In other words, if he's a scholar and he's pious, you can trust his religion. فَلِلْعَوَامِ أَنْ يُقَلِّدُوهُ. Now the layman may follow such a person. And in fact, this even uses the word taqleed of the scholar. The content of it is pretty clear, even though some people have stated that the imam did not say فَعَلَى الْعَوَامِ أَنْ يُقَلِّدُوهُ. He said فَلِلْعَوَامِ أَنْ يُقَلِّدُوهُ. What's the difference between the two?
Choice.
If you say لِلْعَوَامِ, meaning it's up to the layman to follow, it's not binding. If you say عَلَى الْعَوَامِ, it's on the layman to follow. In Arabic, sometimes you have those subtleties.
Binding.
Right. So some people, yeah, we have this hadith about taqlid. It says it's optional to do taqlid. Well, scholars have rejected that, right? Either taqlid is wajib, you have to do taqlid, or you don't. What do you mean it's optional? You want to get your deen at the end of the day. So who do you get it from? How is it that it's optional? Does it make sense for it to be optional? So, in any case, this is a hadith that highlights the role of scholars, and those trustworthy scholars, knowledgeable scholars, can be followed. So the content has been accepted by mainstream scholars. But they have an issue with what? The sanad. The sanad of this, according to a number of scholars, it's a weak sanad, because the book itself, Tafsir Imam al-Askari, some scholars have raised a doubt on whether this tafsir actually has a solid chain to al-Imam al-Askari. And they have raised a number of issues. So some scholars have accepted this hadith throughout history, while other scholars have not. They're like, we have no way of verifying whether this whole book, Tafsir of Imam al-Askari, is an authentic tafsir. So then we'll go back to our first hadith. Now, by the way, when it comes to taqleed, in the future, in our Islamic beliefs course, we will dedicate a class to the marja'iyya system and taqleed, and how is that from a theological perspective we can justify something like that. In fact, we have hadiths that condemn taqleed. In fact, there are verses in the Quran that condemn taqleed. You'll hear people talking about this. So what kind of taqleed is the Quran talking about? What type of taqleed do we do with our maraji'? This is something that we'll examine in detail. But even imagine if we had no hadith, that's sahih, that says you emulate scholars, the intellect itself suffices. Because the intellect says either you go and become an expert in Islamic law, hadith, history, Quran, and you figure out the laws of God yourself, or if you're not an expert, what do you have to do? You follow an expert. There's no third option. What's the third option? If you're not an expert and you don't want to follow an expert, how do you practice the religion of God? Well, even the one, by the way, you bring a valid point, be cautious with everything. Anything you think might be haram, just don't do it. First of all, that makes life miserable. Secondly, to even know the ihtiyatat, you have to be an expert. You have to read what every scholar has said for you to do ihtiyat. I think you're much better off just doing taqleed of one scholar. Really, there is no third way. If someone gets sick, either they're a doctor themselves, they can prescribe the medicine for themselves, or they go to another doctor. There's no other way. So even if we had no hadith, no verse in the Quran about taqleed, the intellectual, rational principle that states if you're not an expert in a field, refer to an expert, tells you to do taqleed. It's as simple as that. Taqleed boils down to this. That's the core of it. We'll examine that in the future, inshallah.